So just to catch up for people who may not have been here, we're going through a text written in an ancient tradition called Lamrim, which started about 1,000 years ago in Tibet. It's how to get enlightened from A to Z. It starts at the beginning and it goes to the end. There are different ways of teaching it. One way is experiential. The teacher will not go on until you have had experiences in your inside of each step that they describe. A shorter way to do it is to just read it and explain it, which is what we're doing. That will take 14 years. So that's the way we're doing it right now. We're on a subject called the Yenlak Dun, which is the 7 steps for preparing for a meditation session. And 4 times a year, I get to do Tibetan, which is what I was trained to do. But I don't get to do it very often. And I really enjoy it. And I know it may be a little bit difficult or even boring for some of you, but I don't care. And this is my chance to do what I was supposed to be doing. Maybe, not really, but generally we go around the world a lot and give general talks to large audiences of, business people or people needing relationship help or stuff like that, which is also very good. But it's fun for me to go deep into the ancient sources. My Lama used to say, when you go to the dollar store, take $100. Which means, I think most of you are teaching or you're going to be teaching, then you should know the details. And you, for everything you don't talk about that you do talk about, there should be 99 things that you don't talk about, but you could talk about if people need it or if it's helpful for people. So it's like being a doctor like Mark, and you have thousands of things you know how to do, but you don't use them all every day. You use one. But you have to know all of them. So, that said, we have finished the first 4 preparations for meditation. So one was bowing down to the admirable qualities of your teacher, whoever your teacher is, okay? Thinking about what it is about them that you admire and that you're trying to learn. And in that sense, bowing down to them, okay? The second one was making them offerings, presenting gifts to that teacher. It could be someone who helped form your life early on. It could be someone you're with now. It could be a historical teacher. It could be someone you haven't met yet, okay? But before a meditation session, you go through these 7 steps. So the second one is offering them something. Drupa Chupa is the highest form of offering, which means the offering of your own practice. I did my yoga today. Okay? I suffered through yoga. I did my meditation today. Okay? I tried to help people today. And teachers like that more than money or, you know, cakes or, you know, other stuff. They much prefer to hear that you did your practice today. And that's the best gift you can give them. The third part of the preparation is to clean your conscience, get things off your conscience that are on your conscience, little things you've done to hurt people. And then fourth, to recognize the good that you're doing. To admire yourself, what you're doing, good things for other people, and to admire what other people are doing, okay? Some kind of admiration practice, celebration practice of what you're doing. So we had just wrapped that up, okay? And we were at a place where we were on the final line of that. See if I can find it. Don't want that. Appreciating yourself and other people. And I had left you with a question. And the question was, at the beginning of the practice of appreciating yourself and other people, which is supposed to be very important before you meditate, before you go into meditation, you're supposed to consciously appreciate good things about yourself and about other people around you. And that's supposed to make your meditation very successful, very intense, okay? And at the beginning of that discussion, Pabongka Rinpoche, who was the teacher of the teacher of the current Dalai Lama and was one of my teacher's teachers, he made a statement that he said, because we're not bodhisattvas, this is a bodhisattva practice. Appreciating yourself and appreciating other people is a practice for bodhisattvas, those who seek to make a perfect world, right? So that they can remove the pain of the world, okay? And then he said, therefore, it's difficult for us to really get our minds around this practice. And then we talked about many ideas, because he doesn't say why. He moves on after that. But then at the end of the treatment, which we just finished last night, and we're ready to go on to the fifth of the seven steps, he made another statement. He said, bodhisattvas are especially grateful, or they have a lot, they're grateful. It's gratifying to them. They appreciate other people in a different way than we do, because they are like a father who's been working very hard to support a large family, and then suddenly one of the children gets the idea to go out and get a job and help support the family. So the father has some help. And then the father, who loves all the children very much, has a special appreciation of this child who's trying to help the rest of the family. Anybody want to take a and then I asked you to consider what you thought the metaphor, how it applies to bodhisattvas appreciating other people. Alejandro, wait, you have a mic? Hang on. Mic is coming.
So, I think the dad is happy because he gets more help in his mission, and he's also rejoicing that the son who's helping is gonna get the satisfaction that he has by helping. So it's like two things in one. That's my take on it.
Good. Yeah. Rosa?
He's like the highest form of bodhicitta. So he taught the son, you know, by example, he actually, you know, taught, but, you know, by, you know, it's like, I think that's what bodhisattva wants, you know, like, they want everyone to obviously learn how to save everybody. So in a way, you know, I think that's kind of like the highest form, bodhicitta.
Yeah, good. Okay. So the father, I didn't think of that aspect. The son is responding to the father's example. Yeah. So hopefully we would be an example that other people would emulate. He has an idea.
I think if the highest offer that we can bring to our teacher is our practice, and if a bodhisattva saw us doing a good practice, it is the highest offer that he can receive.
From the child also?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Cool. A few more. You decide, Rob.
Thank you. I was thinking that, you know, in appreciating the son, he's also appreciating himself, so you get double appreciation because the father has planted seeds to have his son in his life, so you get like double.
Yeah, I like that. Good. He's appreciating the son, for acting like himself. So then he's appreciating himself also. Nice.
Kind of simple, but they're in cahoots together now. They've joined up.
Yeah, I like that. I was kind of thinking that way too, Joe, that there's more people on the team. It's kind of like the father's not lonely anymore. The father's not doing everything himself anymore. Somebody's helping out, you know. Then you feel more, I don't know, you're more charged up to do it because someone's helping. Someone else is helping.
I think that the Bodhisattva is unique and different from other people because he sees the, or she sees the whole world as like a family, and they have joined the family that the Buddhas are in, who also see the world like a big family. And so it just seems to me like when they see anyone doing even a small good thing, they know that that person is eventually going to, that's the path to becoming a big family altogether and being all enlightened together. So they're very happy to rejoice in any small goodness that they see because it will bring everyone together.
Yeah, nice. There's a Tibetan saying, right? It was in the ritual we did today. Tering Sangye Riksuke, Sangye says the Dagyur To. Today I have joined the family of the Buddhas. Now I am a daughter or son of the Buddhas because I want to help the whole world. That's what puts you in that family. Then the family gets bigger. Rob, do you have one?
Yeah. Sort of along the lines what yeah. What Joe was saying, that that the Bodhisattva has taken up the, I mean, there is no other way. He's taken the burden of, he's taken responsibility for all living beings to bring them himself to Buddhahood, and there is no other way. And finally, the son was smart enough. He woke up, I guess, finally to take up the same sort of burden.
Yeah. Good.
The son is his seed. He planted the son, and he's now seeing him grow and blossom like a beautiful flower. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, good. That's really nice. That's really nice. That's a beautiful thought. Yeah. Tim?
He seems to suggest that there's a causal relationship between bodhicitta and the result of rejoicing.
How so? I mean, I like statement. I just wanted some detail.
Well, for example, we're not able to, like, if I was able to remove the suffering of someone just by reaching in and removing it, we know that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas would have already done that. And so in his teaching, he was able to, you know, he's taken on this burden. He has the desire to remove all the suffering of every living being. And all of a sudden, his son has realized.
Or daughter.
Or daughter, right. In this case, right.
Sorry.
His child has realized that he's applied the teachings himself or herself,
yeah,
and then has realized that, oh wow, this is the path to remove my own suffering by helping other people. And so there's this special love that he has, now my child gets it.
Yeah.
Finally gets it.
Yeah.
And there's that love of yes.
Yeah, I like
and,
that.
And I can't really, it's more of a feeling, I would imagine.
Yeah, good. My child finally gets it, Dorit.
Oh.
After Bunny.
So I was thinking, like the father is the Bodhisattva, and then all living beings are like the son because they're the only help or the only hope we have. So in order to liberate all of them, like, we must partner with them. So we're in cahoots with every other living being. So every little goodness they do is one for the team.
Like, yeah, okay, like good. That. I like that. I like the idea of a team.
What I thought is that the bodhisattva is taking personal responsibility, the Laksam Namdak. So what happens is that he gives an example to his son, but he rejoices when his son is taking the Laksam Namdak by himself now. So he knows that he's on the path to be enlightened in the end. So yeah. I think it's the rejoicing of what you're doing and also what others from the personal responsibility point of view.
Nice. That's a Tibetan, that's a Buddhist idea that just before you reach ultimate love, you reach a sense of willingness to take responsibility to help the world, the whole world be happy, even if you have to do it yourself. Okay. One more, then we'll start. Okay, Rick?
I just raised my hand because when I went to open my notes, the homework popped up, and that's exactly what I was working on.
Okay.
So it said my personal take on it was to rejoice in your own positive actions and to take the time to dedicate them is something we all like to talk about. We think it's a good idea, but we haven't really made that connection between the head and the heart that tells us what this is really doing and the extent of the power of that goodness. And a bodhisattva has actualized these practices and knows directly and validly what they will result in. They've kind of taken the medicine already, so for them it's preaching to the converted. But for someone like us to undertake this, they know the benefit that will be derived, so it's kind of like the bodhisattva vows, like now you have joined the family, yeah. You know, now your life has been made worthwhile. So I think it's incredible, because they know what it's going to do.
Okay. They know the future repercussions. Cool. I like it. I like it all. So keep that image in mind, okay? And I said this morning, we had a meditation together, and unfortunately we're going to move on out of this appreciation meditation, but I think we should come back to it. And I think in your own practice you should try to do it every night when you put your head on the pillow. So I'll keep reminding you, and I'll remind Geshe Michael also. And because it really, I've been teaching it for years, but I still lay my head down the pillow and start worrying about my credit cards and stuff. And we have to struggle. Maybe we can help each other. Okay? You can help me. All right, here we go. We're starting class 3. The idea is to get through 5 classes in these 10 days, like one class every 2 days, one homework every 2 days. So we're okay because Diamond Mountain was a little bit special. Okay, we'll catch up, maybe. All right. Ngapa chungkor korwe, do you okay? You got me there, Ngapa? Yeah, okay. Ngapa chungkor korwa kulwe yanagni. So step number 5, before you do a meditation, is to ask your teacher to teach you, okay? In Tibetan, that's called, say chungkor korwa. Chungkor korwa. I'm trying to sneeze. Let me see here. Chuki Korlo means Dharma Chakra, the wheel of the Dharma, okay? Korwa means to turn it. And it's an ancient image in Buddhism. Some people say if a cross is the symbol of Christianity and the Star of David is the symbol of Judaism, that the eight-spoke wheel, Dharma wheel, is the symbol of Buddhism. And the meaning of the wheel, roughly, is that the teachings spin on like a wheel from teacher to disciple. And then the disciple becomes a teacher and they teach it to the next generation. And then that generation teaches it to the next generation. And as long as the teachings are being passed down, then the wheel is turning. So that's what they mean about turning of a wheel. Then he says, Tumba sangye ne tomar shakdun takdun par chungkor ma korwana. Then he's going to go back to the historical first turning of the wheel in this world, okay, on this particular planet. How was it that the wheel of these ideas was first turned? And it was right after the enlightenment of Lord Buddha, 2,500 years ago, sitting under a tree in what's now Bodh Gaya, which was then Vajrasana, seat of the diamond. Lord Buddha became enlightened under a tree there. And then something weird happened, okay? And it's nice to talk about the historical things, which we don't a lot, right? We're so caught up in philosophy. Sometimes we don't talk a lot about the historical part. But if you look up there, it says Shak Dun Tat Dun means for 7 weeks of 7 days each, okay? For 7 weeks of 7 days each, Lord Buddha did not teach what he had learned, okay? He decided for 49 days he didn't teach, okay? Why not, okay? Then I went and got you the original sutra, okay? And I thought you'd like to hear the story of what happened, okay, during those 49 days. And why did he start teaching, okay? So I got this Chunjung. Chunjung means history of Buddhism. It's a style of literature in Tibet. Where did the Dharma come from? Okay, the same word is used in the Vajrayogini practice for her world, her Star of David world, which means the source of the Dharma. So that's a different Chung. Okay, so here is a famous Chunjung by Butun Rinpoche. Butun Rinpoche was, you know him because we learned a yoga sequence that he recorded, but also he lived just before Jetsun Kapa, just before the teacher of the first Dalai Lama, and he helped organize the Kangyur and the Tengyur. He was an extraordinary scholar of the classics of India, and he took tens of thousands of texts and narrowed it down to about 4,600 texts and helped define the Kangyur and the Tengyur. All the texts that didn't make it into the Kangyur and Tengyur disappeared in the world. They didn't survive. So the only reason we have anything left from India is because of Butun Rinpoche. And he had it carved. 25 years ago, this year, we started typing those texts in to preserve them, and we finished recently. So every Buddhist book that survived from India is now available for free, digitally. Searchable. So anyway, here's Butun Rinpoche's account of that, what happened when the Buddha was trying to decide whether he should teach or not. Dene tumba tule chungur shukte sabshi chude usa duma che duchi chuni daki topar gyur. The Buddha went into his own heart. He's sitting under the tree, right? He went into his own heart and he said, sabshi chude usa duma che. I've reached the kind of enlightenment which is like clear light, with no beginning and no end. It is free of all wrong ideas. It is total peace, and it is deep. Duti chuni, this deathless nectar, daki tobagir, I have achieved. Daki tengyan shengi mi shete, but if I try to teach it to others, no one will understand. They will not understand. Mishete, mima nangdab ne parchavanyam. And then he thought to himself, let me stay silent in the forest. Okay? Which is kind of depressing. Okay. She gongxing. Those are the thoughts that ran through his mind. Jikten kun la ningje tai nga. Shengi sulwatap la ngami tu. Kyo didak sang na debate. Dei sulwatap na korlokor. Then he had a different idea, something, I don't know, they don't say why, but something came into his head, another thought came into his head, here it is, and Pabok Rinpoche quotes a piece of it, which is why I went and got it for you. Jikten kun la ningje taye nga, I am a person who has love, infinite love for the world. I am a person who has infinite love for the world. Shengi suwatabla ngamitu. I'm not going to wait until somebody has the intelligence to ask me to teach. Kewo didatsana depate. I live in a country where at that time was Hindu, right? And they believe in Brahma. The real pronunciation is Brahma, okay? They believe in Brahma. Therefore, I will get Brahma to ask me to teach, and then I'll teach. I'll turn the wheel. Because people in India will see Brahma asking me to teach, and then they will listen to me. But otherwise, they won't listen. Okay? So he decided to get Brahma to ask him to teach. And that was the first requesting of the teaching of the wheel in this world. Okay? That was the first Chunkor Korwa Sulwa, the first request to a teacher in this world to teach Buddhism. Happened that way. Then what happened? Nyamde e kewe tongsum gi dapo sangba tsukpu chenki shene chok tente sangba bum chak duchu tsage dan chepa telmo jarte. Then the Buddha sent out billions of light rays from his heart. Okay, they traveled through the universe, through the three levels of this universe, to a billion planets. That light extended to a billion planets. Dharpa Sangba Tsupuchen, and then Brahma, who is also called Shikhandan. It means the one with a top knot. Okay. Tsupuchen, in Tibetan it's called Tsupuchen. Ki Shene, he's like, oh, what's the light? You know, what's happening? There's a small light covering a billion planets. What's happening? Like Brahma was wondering, what's going on? Then then he realized that he was being asked to ask. Okay? So Drogchen Day, he took along his friends. Samba Bumchak Duchu Tsage. Uh, 680,000 little Brahmas went with him. With their palms like that at their chest, Chambo Jate. Yeshi Chambo Choki Kingor Dubne Ni. Chokchu Doctor is their number Kidzete. Yeshi Serki Mi Pema Kajepa. Mawai Nima Tering Chile Tangyom Shuk. Then they came to Lord Buddha and said, let me get this straight. Yeshi Chambo Choki Kingor Dubne. You have achieved the immense realm of the highest wisdom there is. You are currently, what do you call it, disturbing the universe with a light show. Yeshi Serki Mi Pema Kachipa. The brilliant light of your wisdom could open the lotus blooms of humankind. The brilliant light from your mind could be opening the lotus blooms of the people of earth. Mawe nima tering chile tanyam shuk. Why are you just sitting there? Okay, this is Brahma in 680,000 asking Buddha, you know, why, you know, let's go, man. Time to teach, you know. Shepala sope kulwa. Then they asked Buddha in many verses like that. Kulwa, they exhorted him to please teach. Chang mi sung me nang te songo. Then Buddha didn't say anything. Okay? And they left. Okay? They went on. The same thing happens with a Hindu deity called Shakra. Okay? Gyajin Dende Gyajin Dinamata Kituka number two alert. And they said to Lord Buddha, your mind has achieved enlightenment like in the way that the full moon compares to the stars. Okay? Like the stars are beautiful, but when the full moon's out, I don't know, where I live, you can't see the stars on the full moon. Okay? It overwhelms them. Jigten Mumba Sherab Ojungsul, you are the one who has, we ask you to, what do you call when you start a battle? There's a word in English. How do you say start a battle, though? We ask you to... There's a very beautiful idiom, old language. I don't know. It means engage, but it's older and it's more sweet. I don't know. Think about it. I forget the word. Anyway, we ask you to start the battle. Take the wisdom, take the light of your wisdom and remove the darkness of this planet. Please take the light of your wisdom and remove the darkness of this planet. They asked him, but he didn't respond. Okay? He didn't say anything. Then Sangbe Kundasawa Gyarwa Chilaki Tuba Kyuki Chuni Tendusu. Then Brahma came back and said, we please ask you to teach. And then the Buddha replied, Kegu Dupa Namgi Ching. The people of this particular planet are enslaved by their desires. Gyun ki raptu depa yin. Ngay di sekni chenpu to. De tawe na tenmi pen. I have reached my realizations with great effort and great trouble. De tawe na tenmi pen. And so I realize that it won't help them if I teach, because they won't be able, they won't be willing to put out the same effort. Okay. But eventually he agreed. Okay. Kewa didat sambala depate. Then he responded to the request by Brahma. Lang slat sangbe kulwe. Are you with me? Lat sangbe kulne. Yeah, there you go. Lahat sangs be. Third line of the third paragraph. Second half of the line. There you go. Yeah, lahat sangs be kulne. So, responding to the request of Brahma, tokmar kor de nga, se kor nga de sangbo. Kor nga de sangbo. This is a very famous Buddhist expression. The Sangbo is Bhadra, like Bhadra, what do they call it? Vira Bhadrasana. It means excellent, right? De means, Nga De means the group of five. And Kor means his disciples. So his, these are called the first five. It's, they were the first five disciples of Lord Buddha, okay? They have a special name in Tibetan and Sanskrit. They're called the first five. And this was a very famous group of five Hindus who were meditating in the forest and with Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha had joined them to meditate in the forest for many years, and they were trying to get enlightened, and they were attracted to him. And they became his disciples because, say takmo, lujin, takmo, lujin. Takmo means tigress. Lujin means he gave his body to the tigress. So there's this beautiful history that many lifetimes before he became a Buddha, our Buddha was a prince, and he went out into the forest and he saw a tigress who was dying of hunger, and then she had four cubs and she was unable to give them milk, and they were all lying on the ground, they couldn't move, they were dying of hunger. So he was already a bodhisattva, and he laid down next to them and said, eat me, eat my body, you know. And they were too weak to eat his body. This is in the Serudambedo. This is in the Golden Light Sutra. I taught it. It's one of the first things I ever taught. I think that was 73 or something, 74. I don't remember. 81, something. Anyway, it's a beautiful story. So he takes a branch from a tree and he breaks it off and he gouges out his skin. He gouges out his chest until he's bleeding a lot. And then he lays down really close to the mother and she starts licking the blood. And then after a while, she's able to eat him. And he gives up his body. But as he's dying, he says, in exchange for my blood, you will become my first five disciples. So when I become a Buddha, you are the first five. And it happened. So when he was born in this world, they were attracted to him for some reason. Okay. And when Brahma asks the Buddha, the new Buddha, to teach after 49 days, he agrees to teach the five disciples who weren't intelligent enough to ask him themselves. But a Buddhist is not allowed to teach without being asked normally. Okay, unless we know that someone is very interested but too dumb to ask. Or they don't. Rinpoche used to say to us, you're supposed to ask me to teach. And we would object to Rinpoche. We'd say, but we don't know what to ask for, you know. And then he's like, well, what do we do, you know? And then we made up this special prayer. We said, oh, Rinpoche, please teach us what we don't know what to ask for, you know. And then he'd say, okay, I'll teach you what you don't know enough to ask for. And that's the deal we made with him. So it went like that. So I was, I'm kind of into those five first disciples. There's not a lot of information about them. But someday it would be nice to read the story. And I've taught it before many, many years ago. I think 35 years ago. It's a beautiful story. And that sutra, the Golden Light Suvarna Prabha Sutra, Golden Light Sutra, it is the most popular sutra in Mongolia. And I taught it there also. But I thought you'd like to hear at least their names, okay? So one is called the head disciple. I assume it was the mother. I don't know for sure, but I believe it was the mother. Tigress. Is called Kunche Kaundinya. Kaundinya. In Sanskrit, that's Ajñāta Kaundinya. So you can say Kaundinya, okay? Kaundinya. Say Kaundinya. It's got a lot of retroflex. It means you turn your tongue back. If you turn your tongue back in your mouth, you will sound like a person from a certain country. Okay? Say Kaundinya. Turn your tongue back. Kaundinya. Pandita. Mandala. Hatha Yoga. Okay? That's the correct pronunciation. Hatha. So that was the main first disciple. Second disciple was called, in Tibetan it's Tatul. Say Tatul. Ashvajit. Ashvajit. Ashva means horse. Jit means tame the horse. Horse tamer. Horse whisperer. Okay. His name was Horse Whisperer. Say Langba. Langba. The Sanskrit was very, very hard to find. I only found it in one place. I think it's correct. But it was Vaspa. Vaspa. Which sort of means steam. Like off of water. I don't know why. The next one was called Mingchen. Say Mingchen. Which in Sanskrit is Mahanama. Mahanama. Say Mahanama. It means high name, great name. Okay. Then the last one was named Sangden. Say Sangden. In Sanskrit, that's Bhadrika, the pure one. Okay. Okay. So those were the names of the first five. They're called the first five. Deyang Ngadela, to that group of five, Denshi Lensum Nandang Chunyi Sude. Lord Buddha, the first teaching was the four truths, the four higher truths, right? the four Arya truths. Misnamed noble truth. Okay, it's a mistranslation, which has bred a lot. Denshi Lensum, he taught the four higher truths three sets, three times. So a total of 12. So Denshi, four truths, Lensum, three times, Namdang Junyi, so 12 reiterations. Okay? Sudete, he repeated it. De means to repeat. Lungi Chungkor Korwa, and he taught the wheel of the Dharma, the physical wheel of the Dharma. That's an implication that there is a mental wheel of the Dharma. So he turned the physical wheel of the Dharma in 12 reiterations. Okay. Korway, Tambor Kunche Kaudinya Dachamba Top. And Kaudinya reached Nirvana in that session. Okay. In those sessions, I think the disciple who had been the tigress probably got the most of him in her, became an arhat in those sessions, during those sessions. Shen Shi Junshu Topte, and the rest became stream enterers, which means they saw emptiness directly. Okay. The other four. That's a pretty extraordinary day of teaching, okay? Okay. Junshu Topte. Tope Chunko Duje Gyula Korwa. And thus he was able to turn the wheel of realizations within their minds. Okay? So by turning the physical wheel of speech or of books, he was able to turn the wheel of their mind, inside their mind, and get them to understand emptiness, the pen. Okay? He spoke, he turned the physical wheel of speech or video or audio or books, paper, talking, and that triggers the mental wheel inside of the disciple's mind. Okay. Gyula Korwam Topain. He was able to turn the wheel in their minds, meaning to get them to achieve those levels. Okay. Korwa Topain. De Topa Lungi Chungkorla T. So Pabongka Rinpoche is drawing a chain of events. He says, if you think about it, there's a three-stage chain of events. For someone to, for the wheel of the Dharma to be turned in someone's mind, the wheel of the Dharma must be turned in speech, outside, right? So for you to reach the understanding of the pen fully, someone has to explain it to you in words. So the turning of the wheel in a person's heart depends on somebody outside of them turning the wheel in words. Okay? Lungi Chungko de Suwatapa. And for the wheel to be turned in words, there must be a request. Okay? In Buddhist tradition, we don't teach unless someone asks. Okay? Unless it's an extraordinary circumstance where the whole world is too dumb to ask. Then you send light to Brahma and he comes from another planet and he pretends to ask you. Okay? Like that. Okay, got it? So it's been a tradition in Buddhism since the first day of Buddhism that we don't teach unless someone specifically asks us to teach. We do this little prayer before the teaching, you know, Sachi Poki Jukshin, which is supposed to trigger your eyes wandering around the, you know, while your mouth moves. You know, it's amazing. You can do it for 25 years and not think about it. I can attest. So anyway, you are offering the whole world for the teaching, okay? One day Rinpoche was in a bad mood. I don't know. He was like, you know, I'm teaching for free for 30 years, you know, he's like, and why don't you guys work a little harder to let people know what I'm doing here in New Jersey, you know, like, as if anyone would come, right, to New Jersey. But anyway, you know, why don't you let people know what's happening here? because you're being kind of selfish. You guys are drinking of the Dharma every single day. He taught every single day, many hours, you know, for 30 years, 25, 30 years. And he said, you guys are kind of selfish because you're not really, you know, there's no, what do you call it, announcements in the Dharma magazines that this is going on. You're just enjoying me and you're not sharing me with other people. And look at all these other lamas, you know, it's like $200 for a tantric initiation. I heard it went up to 5,000 or something recently, which is really not proper. And so we're like, oh, Rinpoche, should we put out an announcement? How much do you want to charge? And he says, he got all angry. He got double angry. And then he's like, what do you mean charge for Dharma? What are you going to charge? You know, one word of Dharma is worth all the gold in this world. So, you know, what are you going to charge for an hour? You know, $3 zillion an hour. You know, he got all upset. He said, what number are you going to put on the advertising? You know, a zillion or two, a gazillion? Or he got really upset. He says, we might as well make it free because it's priceless. You know, no one could afford it anyway. Let's just make it free, you know. And so he did that. He never charged for his whole life. He taught for free, right? And the same in the monastery, okay? But the student must ask. And we're not allowed to go door to door and knock on the doors and say, did you hear about Pabonka? You know, and you need Pabonka Rinpoche, you know. Give them a pamphlet and get your foot in the door. And, you know, we're not allowed to do that, okay? But Rinpoche would always say, if you know someone is kind of spiritually minded, but they don't know what you know, they don't know that you know something, then you can tell them, look, you know, I know this cool stuff. If you want, we can go to Starbucks and I'll tell you a little bit about it. You know, if they just have no idea what you know, okay? So Abelma, for example, she was my secretary in the diamond company, okay, for years. And they didn't know anything about me. And then one day she's like, you know, how come you're so patient with everybody? And I said, well, you know, we're trained to be. Who's we? You know? And then she came to my class. And it was really cute because, oh, that's a long story. On that, I had four students who were black, who from the Caribbean, two guys and two girls. And that night in the class, which normally had like 8 people or 10 people in it, only those guys showed up, two boys and two girls. Puntok was one of them, Pelma was one of them, and they were all like, you know, this is a good class. And anyway, some miracle happened that day. So if someone's your secretary in the diamond company for 5 years and they finally ask you, you know, why are you so patient, then you can help, you can mention it to them. But those of you who don't know her, she's 2 years into a 3-year retreat. She's a Buddhist nun for the last 20 years now, 15? How long? About 15 years, something like that. And she's doing a good retreat. She's the hardcorest of all the retreatants. She's been in deep retreat for without a break for almost 2 years. So there's a threefold chain of events, right? When the thoughts turn in the person's mind, the wheel of the Dharma is being turned inside their mind. That depends on someone talking and explaining the pen to them, for example. And then that depends on someone asking for the pen explanation, okay? And so there's a threefold thing. But in Buddhism, someone has to ask, okay? So as someone who's spiritually minded and as someone who wants to get enlightened to help people, we should be aware that we have to ask the teacher, okay? What's in Christianity? They say, knock and you shall receive, ask. Yeah. knock and the door will be open, ask and you shall receive. But you have to ask. And it's amazing. Sometimes you get used to your teacher and you don't ask, you know. So I was reviewing this class and I thought, I haven't asked my teacher for a long time to keep teaching me. And I did, and it was wonderful. Some cool things happened. Anyway, so you're supposed to ask. And that's why the fifth step developed. Step number five of preparing for meditation is to formally ask your teacher, if only in your mind, because you're sitting on your cushion, right? Please teach me. And then, of course, it should be done physically. I mean, you should ask them physically, right? And I'm afraid that the more we learn from a lama, the more we get used to them. And we start assuming that they'll be around forever. And we also, we don't take it as special anymore. You know, like there's an Iron Man 3's come out, I'm going to skip Thursday night. Or something like that. You know what I mean? We tend to get used to it or take it for granted. And it's important not to, okay? What was I going to ask? I was going to add something to that. Yeah, also if you ask every once in a while, you might get something that you didn't know about. Okay, and that's fun too. And I think the asking has to be a little bit serious. You can't, like, somebody's getting into their car after 4 hours of, 6 hours of teaching, and, hey, will you teach us? Bye. You know, it's got to be kind of sexy and cool. You know, it should be done with panache, you know. You know, it should be done kind of beautifully and elegantly, you know. So, I made a big French dinner. Okay. The Lama went on a tangent, okay? The editor of the text is saying, who's the Lama here? Pabongkor Rinpoche went on a tangent. And he doesn't record the whole tangent. He says, Dikap Dzule, from the Abhidharma Kosha. Dzule means Kosha, right? Abhidharma Kosha. The one of the five great books of ancient India, which are studied in the Geshe course, okay? Dzule, Abhidharma Kosha, Chungi Korlo Tongwe Lam. The path of seeing is the Dharma wheel. Is the wheel of the Dharma. The path of seeing is the wheel of the Dharma. To see emptiness directly is the wheel of the Dharma. That's the position of the Abhidharma school. Okay. She Sokle Tsambe Terche Tse. Our Lama went off on a tangent based on those words from the Abhidharma Kosha. And then he doesn't say what the tangent was, but I can tell you what it was, because I studied Abhidharma for 12 years with Rinpoche. So I thought you might like a little bit of a tangent, just to honor the other tangent. So whether you want it or not, here it comes. It's one of those tangents you wouldn't know to ask for. In that tangent, they compare the... Well, let me go at it this way. According to Buddhist belief, this planet is older than people think. This planet has been around longer than people think. And there were many high civilizations, like if Atlantis or things like that. We believe there were such things. And we have records of them in Buddhism. I go to Sedona a lot. When I drive into Sedona, you see all these weird red mountains, you know, and they looked like huge city that melted during a war or something. And then sometimes I wonder, did people know how to shape stone with their minds or something, you know, and is this really just this huge ruins, or is it just by accident, or Tepoztlan, all of those mountains, were they just good luck that they came that way? Or then sometimes it's not so hard for me to imagine there was a civilization there. And it fell down and the mountains are still there. So anyway, according to Buddhism, there were such civilizations. And according to Buddhism, our world was visited by people from other worlds, okay? And they came in ships. and they were huge. They would fit 1,000 people or 5,000 people, and there were different colors of ships made from different metals. And some looked like gold, and some looked like silver or bronze. There were different colors of ships, and they were shaped like saucers. Okay, this is Abhidharma. This was written 17 centuries ago. I'm not making it up, okay? I'm not a New Age person. So the ships came, and then there were the people who owned the ships became the masters of this world. Because they were militarily outstripped everything in this planet. So they became the people who ran this world. And then they had a strange karma. The people who owned the ships had a strange karma that everybody loved them. So the people on Earth didn't feel like they were conquered. They felt like these were beautiful people. Like the Polynesians who saw the first sailors and thought they were angels. Then they gave them venereal disease and killed all of them. But anyway, these extraordinary beings came, and they were so gentle and beautiful that the people of Earth asked them to be the rulers of the Earth, and they took over the Earth. And then they were called the Chakravartins. Okay, they were called Chakravartin, the emperors of the wheel, the emperors who rule by the wheel, by the power of the wheel, and the wheel is their spaceships. The wheel is their spaceships, which are mainly used for transporting troops. And there, how many troops they fit and like that, that's a long story. But it's in the Abhidharma. So those spaceships had eight sections in the wheel, like a space station, okay? They were shaped like a wheel and they had eight spokes. And so that wheel became the symbol of Buddhism, okay? That shape became the symbol of Buddhism. And Lord Buddha taught an eightfold path, eight-step path that leads to enlightenment. And as the symbol of that path, he used the wheel, the eight-spoked wheel. Okay, so that wheel has come to represent the turning of the teachings of the Buddha. Okay, because there are eight spokes, and each spoke refers to one of spiritual practice of the eight high practices. Okay, so I thought you'd like to hear them. Okay, while we're on a tangent, we should go on a tangent just to honor Prabhupada Rinpoche. First, there are eight. They call Paklam Yenla Ge. Say Paklam Yenla Ge. The eight components of the path of a person who has seen emptiness directly. Okay. And there are eight components. Number one, yandape tawa. Say yandape tawa. Correct view, good view. Meaning, I don't know. If you want money, you have to help others make money. If you want a partner, you should help lonely people. If you want to be healthy, you should help the sick. Okay? This is a correct view of where things come from. Okay, so correct ideas about where things come from is the first of the eight. Okay, second, yandape topa. Yandape topa means right thinking as opposed to right view. So then I went and looked it up because I wasn't clear what's the difference between right view, which is number one, and right thinking, which is number two. And the sources that I studied said that right thinking occurs after the direct perception of emptiness. So then you start thinking right about where stuff comes from. So the first one is more like the direct perception of emptiness, and the pen lectures you get leading up to that. If you're lucky enough to be on a lot of DCI tours, you get 485 pen lectures. And then you get the direct perception of emptiness. That's number one. Then what happens after that as you process what happened to you is number two, right thinking. Number three is right speaking. Like you can describe it correctly to other people. you can describe the Dharma correctly to other people. Mainly emptiness, okay? You learn how to teach the pen thing correctly, okay? Number four, yantape le kita. This is a difficult expression. It means a correct end of deeds, the correct end of deeds. And it has a special meaning. So I went and looked that up for you. Okay. Sok chipala sopa migewile nam chungse michepa pangte. Deeds here means karma. And the end means when you come to a realization that you can't do bad karmas at all, then you reach the end of karma. Okay? The end of your thinking about karma. And you're very careful never, never, ever to hurt anyone. That's number four, okay? Very careful, living very carefully. Number five, yandape tsoa, say tsoa. Tsoa means livelihood, job. I saw a cartoon. Rinpoche used to watch a lot of baseball, so therefore we both saw a lot of Budweiser ads. And there was a cute one. There's this guy named Corky Carroll who lived in my generation. And he was one of the most famous surfers of my generation, you know. And we all admired him. So they have Corky Carroll walks into a bar and orders a Budweiser. And he's sitting there and the bar is very loud and everybody's like, you know, and the TVs are going, you know. And he's just drinking his beer, you know. And he's like talking to himself. And he says, you know, I should do the beer thing. You know, I was thinking, you know, this surfing life, wandering around from beach to beach, looking for the perfect wave, being chased by girls in bikinis, you know. I don't know, you know, it's not really very responsible. I was thinking I should maybe get a job. And then suddenly the whole bar stops. Everybody in the whole bar is silent. And he doesn't notice, you know, he's still drinking. Everybody's like, you know. And then he goes, nah. And then everybody starts talking again. Then the whole bar starts talking, you know. Anyway, yandai ben soa means honest living, to make an honest living, okay? And it means not grubbing off of other people, okay? And we've had trouble with that. I think Michael Moore warned me in 1998 or something in New York City. I remember. I'm just saying I remember. I even remember the person involved, as you probably do. But he said, you know, you should really encourage your students to be more responsible. And, you know, they shouldn't grub off of other people. They shouldn't irritate and bother other people. They should have their own living. And Rinpoche forced me to learn the diamond business. He said, you have to learn something to feed yourself. You should learn something. You know, like Nicole's went to massage school and is doing massage therapy. So, you know, you don't have to do it all day, every day, but you can have a skill that you can make a living and not bother other people, you know, like that. It's okay if a sponsor is asking you to teach and they can put you up in a house or something like that and you're teaching actively, frequently, but just to kind of hang out and, what do you call it? Just hang out and you're not really using the time. I mean, I distinguish between people who are hanging out and not using the time and something like the three-year retreatants who are supposed to be, probably are, working really hard to get enlightened or something like that. So, but anyway, it's part of a high bodhisattva's life that they have a way to make money in a responsible way and not hurt other people by not working, okay? Like that. Which doesn't mean that there's not times in your life when you can't go into a long retreat. But you have to be honest, you have to ask the sponsors, you have to say, I want to do a 6-month retreat, or I want to do a three month retreat, and you know, will you pay for my food or something like that? And if they say yes, then it's still right livelihood, Okay, it's still correct. But you can overdo it. You can abuse the privilege, right? And that's what he's talking about. So Yanda Bitsoa means don't abuse the privilege of practice supported by someone else. Like have some access to a job or some skill that you can support yourself. Okay. Yanda Bitsoa. It's one of the eight most important practices for an Arya. Yeah. Number five. Yeah. Yeah, it could be that. It could be that. If you pushed it to its extreme, it would involve helping others to support themselves. It's the ultimate job. All right? Okay. Yanda Pitsulwa means... correct effort, especially in your meditation practice. Yandapi Dhamma number 7 is correct reflection. And then number 8 is Yandapi Tingenzin, which means correct meditation. So these are the 8 spokes of the wheel of the Dharma, which came about historically because of the spaceships with 8 parts to them. Okay, yeah. You can read it two ways, okay? Dhamma could be reflecting on what you've studied and learned, but it can also refer to the capacity to watch your mind during meditation to see if you're distracted or not. Both of those can be called recollection. There's even a third one that means to think about high beings and high ideas, you know, reflect on those, okay? We could do a teaching on that, and different schools have different interpretations of the 8, okay? We're doing Abhidharma tonight, okay? You want to do a little bit more and take your break after that? Is that okay? 5 more minutes on this? Oops. We're on the wheel of the Dharma. So this gets a little bit... You ready? Okay. There are 3... characteristic of a wheel which resemble the path of seeing. So for an Abhidharma practitioner, if you ask them, why does the wheel resemble the path of seeing? They would give you the following answer. Ready? Okay, let's consider the 8 components of an Arya's practice. Chuki korlo shejate. We refer to them as the Dharma wheel. Why? Because they are very similar to the wheel that the ancient wheel emperors used to have, meaning their spaceship. Okay? This is... who is this? This is Choni Lama's Abhidharma commentary, which is extraordinary, which someone should translate. Okay. Delta, okay, he's using debate format. Korlo Rinpoche ni dela temper chepe tawa dan duchin nyur derbe do soki mukyo dan chepe chepe tiso sumba de shin tu, okay? Because that, a wheel has 3 components. And the 8 parts of an Arya's practice also has 3 components. They can be grouped into 3 themes, okay? What? Number 1, temper chepe tawa. Dewa means, what do you call the center of a wheel, of a wagon wheel? The hub, yeah. So there's the hub, which centers the whole practice. There's the hub of the wheel. What do you call it? In Tibetan, it makes it firm. Stabilize? Yeah, or it kind of centers the whole thing. It's the centering force. The hub is the centering force. Dunching nyuro dowa soki mukyu. Mukyu means, what do you call the thing around the outside of a wagon wheel? The rim, yeah. That's called mukyu in Tibetan, mukyu. The rim holds the whole structure together and also allows the thing to move fast. More efficient than legs, okay? The rim, the outside of the wheel. And then there's the What's left? The spokes. Chippa chippa tsip. Tsip means either ribs or spokes. Okay, tsip. The Sahasrara chakra is called Tsiptong, the thousand spokes. Sahasra means thousand. Ara means tsip. What do you call it? Spokes. Okay, so Sahasrara means this chakra at the top of the head. So spokes, the spokes which delineate. They use the word cut. The spokes divide the wheel into sections, okay? That's the function of the spokes, okay? How does that relate to the eight practices we just talked about? Here's the correlation. Number one, three of the eight practices are similar to the hub of the wheel. We could guess all night, but it's been a long day, a long week. I'll just give them to you. First, speech of an Arya, okay? The speech of a person who has seen emptiness is very extraordinary, and it centers things like the hub of the wheel, okay? The care with which an Arya tries to help people, lekita, right? The end of action, the end of karma, is the other centering principle. As is the having an honest living, okay? Having an honest living. By the way, if you are a person who has devoted themselves to practice, right? And you are living off the happily offered gifts of sponsors, then right livelihood refers to thanking them, giving them updates about your progress, keeping good records of your expenses, you know, cleanliness in your use of donations is correct livelihood for a Dharma practitioner who is engaged in some deep practice and needs a sponsor. You can still do correct livelihood, but it involves being very careful with the money, never misappropriating a penny, accounting for it properly to the sponsor, giving them constant updates about how the money was used, and like that. Receipts, okay, like that. It's a pain, and it's a big part of Buddhist practice to have clean, clean, accurate records of donations spent, how they were spent, and were they spent in accordance with the donor's wishes? Okay. Okay. So assume the young sung. Then here are the next one, the ones which relate to the which part of the wheel? The rim, okay. Yanda pitawa topa so asum. Correct view, correct thinking, and correct effort in your meditation practice are like the rim, which had two qualities. It kept everything together. Dupa means it combines, keeps everything in, and helps you move fast. Okay. Then the third part is which part? The spokes. What's left? I'm sorry, I blew it. The last three were the spokes. He changed the order on me. Okay. The last three were the spokes and not the rim. Sorry. Because they allow you to move fast. In some commentaries, it says Jukching Chepa means to start and to go. Okay. The spokes are correct view, correct thinking, and correct effort, which refers to your meditation practice. Okay. Which only leaves two to be the rim, which are reflection and meditation, okay? And that's why the Abhidharma Kosha school thinks that the path of seeing is similar to a wheel, okay? If we're really going to talk about the wheel of the Dharma, though, and turning the wheel of the Dharma to truly appreciate it, I think you have to mention at least briefly the three historical periods of teaching of this historical Buddha. So the last Buddha, Gautama, he had three great periods in his life. He taught, his teachings went through three great periods, themes, like themes of 10 or 20 or 30 years long. He followed certain themes, and then he switched over to another theme, and then he switched over to... So he, in his lifetime, in Buddhism we say, the Buddha turned the wheel three times. In three, what do you call it, periods of his life, there were three periods of the turning of the wheel, okay? And I think we should take a break. And then when you come back, see, I don't want you to think about the turning of the wheel without knowing the three turnings of the wheel, okay? All of these things have a lot of relevance to our own lives, okay? They can be applied to your own life. In your lifetime, you will go through major teaching periods. You know, like Joni Mitchell's, those of you who ever heard of her, you know, first she did pop, then she did jazz, then she did symphony stuff. Like musicians go through those huge periods, 10 years long, 20 years long. And Lord Buddha did that. He went through three major periods of teaching. And that's also called the turning of the wheel, the three turnings of the wheel. So just to complete the tangent, I'm going to go on an additional tangent that Pabongka Rinpoche didn't even go on. Okay, but we'll do that after a break. So a couple of announcements before the break. There's a bake sale going on. Like if you've never been here, like I think one person maybe, we sell cookies. We overcharge. You should offer double what we ask for. And over the last 7 or 8 years, we've made $100,000. And every year, we send some young people to the Tibetan monastery to study for a month. And I'm very proud of that program. It's run by Rebecca. Thank you for that. And it's just awesome to be in a Tibetan Buddhist monastery with 3,000 monks for a month. It's like heaven. It's like a trip to heaven. And they come back, it changes their life. It changes their whole life. And especially a lot of our students from Mexico have expressed interest in going this year. And I think that's really beautiful. So we need extra money this year, because the program is spreading. So that means you have to eat extra cookies. Okay. I've been asked to remind you that there's a retreat. The second half of these teachings about appreciating yourself. We'll be having a deep 10-day retreat up in Prescott, Arizona, which is much more... It's going to start getting hot here. Today it was. Today it's going to hit 100 by Monday or something like that. And then we should all go to the forest and hide for the summer. So if you'd like to come, it's a very pleasant forest in northern Arizona, and we have a beautiful program, very quiet and intense. And we do a lot of cool practices like fire offerings, things like that, and stuff like that. A lot of more meditation and quiet. So you're welcome to come to that. We don't charge for the teaching, but we do charge for the... We have to pay the camp. It's a children's camp. So we have to pay them for the beds and, you know, the food. So we charge you for beds and food, but it's really cheap, okay? I had a lady, she came to me and she said, I don't like the beds, you know? And I said, would you be willing to pay more? Because there's another camp nearby. She said, no. So you're stuck with this camp, okay? And we don't charge anything for the teaching, but we have to pay the camp. There are work study available. There are a limited number of scholarships, and you have to ask for them by... We don't have a date yet? No. Ask for them now, okay? Because if you ask too late, you won't get one, okay? And there are also camping spots, which are quite pleasant in the summer, although it is the monsoon season when there's a little bit of rain. or there can be. We never know, right? Yeah. Then someone asked me to announce. People have asked me to teach the Yoga Sutra again. I did 12 years of teaching yoga texts. We did the Yoga Sutra for 4 years in New York. We did the Hatha Yoga Pradipika for 4 years. And then we did the Bhagavad Gita for four years. So people have asked me if I could do it again, mainly so it could be filmed and put on the internet for people to see and follow. And then I've been asked by a lot of yoga studios because they would like something that they can include in their teacher trainings. Could you teach the Yoga Sutra again in a small parts that we could add to our teacher trainings, like on weekends, like two nights in a weekend, and that could be part of our teacher training. Because in their physical practice, Americans are really advanced. They should be proud, you know. The level of yoga in America, and I have to say the level of yoga in this room this morning, I was very happy about it, you know. A new teacher came who doesn't know all of us, and I saw her walking around, and I could hear her mind. Because I was looking around, and everybody's serious, you know. Everybody has a pretty good practice. And I was very proud of you guys. And physically, the level of yoga in America and in our group is quite good. It's really pretty good, and I'm pretty impressed. I'm going to give a hard class on tomorrow. So I thought I'd make it a little challenging class. You're welcome to come. You can lay through half of it. I don't care. I usually don't whip you too hard. But I thought to make it a little bit more challenging tomorrow because I think you're ready for it and a little bit more interesting music than I usually do. But anyway, I was proud of the physical level. But mentally, the spiritual part of yoga, which in Buddhism we are trained for, I don't know, we got 18 years of training in the spiritual side of yoga from Rinpoche, certain aspects of Tantra. The physical side of yoga, I mean the spiritual side, is absent from American yoga studios. They can read some Khalil Gibran or something that they'll tell you to be happy and think about Om. At the yoga studio where I go, there's a huge banner in Sanskrit, you know? And it's been there ever since I've been going there, 5-6 years. And I asked the owner, you know, what's that Sanskrit mean? She said, I don't know. it's across the whole front of the yoga studio. And it's like that. The level of knowledge of the deeper spiritual aspect of yoga is very poor in this country. So we kind of wanted to share that with people and catch them up on the spiritual side. So anyway, we're going to start another round of, yoga philosophy courses about the Yoga Sutra, the classics of yoga, so that people can appreciate the spiritual side of yoga and also the inner body teachings, which are from Buddhist Tantra. So I'm going to start that, and then we're going to start filming it and put it online, maybe on an online yoga site or something like that. So, what's his name? Liran Katz from Israel. He gave me a subscription to this online yoga thing. You know, and I'm like, thanks, Liran. And I like threw the paper out. And like, I'm not going to have my morning yoga led by some person on a 4-inch screen. You know, it's offensive to me. I want my yoga to be led by a real person. You know, I'm not going to learn yoga from a computer. It's too weird, you know. That's what I said the first time I used a typewriter also. So anyway, I took one class and I loved it. And then I started taking all of them and they're fantastic. But they don't have the spiritual side of yoga. So what we're going to do is start filming classes by you. Okay? And then we'll pay you. Every time somebody punches the button for your class, you'll get paid something if you want to participate. You know, like we'll charge them for per month or something, and then they can take as many classes as they. The one I take is $18 a month. I end up paying about 50 cents a class. And they're wonderful classes. They're really good. And so I would like to, we have so many good yoga teachers and so many different styles. And we can also teach living, healthy living. You know, Anatole can give a lecture about almond milk. I can talk about Swiss chard that grows all year. You know, we can talk about weight control, and which is a big thing in America. What, 60% of the children are already overweight. So when they grow up, they'll get sick, and it'll hurt the country. And so we have this idea to have like a sort of a deluxe yoga site. You are welcome to talk to me if you want about putting a class on there. And anybody, and especially we're going to have in Spanish a lot of classes and in Chinese. The Chinese classes are already being filmed. We have a very generous sponsors who bought the camera equipment, and they're being filmed in Taiwan already. And so we're going to film classes in Spanish and in English, and then you can take them, you know. And so if you want to teach a class online, we'll take any class that's filmed well. And that's half coherent, you know. And then if nobody pushes your button, that's your problem. Okay, it's a natural, what do you call it? Natural selection. Okay, if your class is good, more people will push the button. Okay, or I don't know. So like that, you're welcome to submit, and we'll take any good classes, and we'll film you. We're also filming people. Okay. Anyway, I'm filming little 2-minute. Yoga Sutra clips that people can say, I want a 2-minute talk before I do my yoga. I want to know what Maitri means in the Yoga Sutra, or Karuna, or what does Yogacittavritti Nirodha mean, you know? And then you have a 2-minute, 3-minute talk, but authentic, helpful. And so I'll be filming those. And then I thought it would be nice to film them in a real talk, because then people could come and listen to the talk also. So we're going to start that process on the trip to China, is it? On the way to China, we're going to stop in Sacramento and L.A. on the way out and start filming the Yoga Sutra portions of it. So that'll be teachings on the Yoga Sutra, and that will go on for 5, 6, 7 years, I imagine. And we'll just go deeper and deeper. So one of them is held at Zuda Yoga in Sacramento, Friday, May 24th. Talk to Ami if you're interested, am I right? Yeah, and we'll start filming there. But it'll be a real teaching, so you can come to that also. And those will be developed into courses that people can include in their teacher trainings, like that. That's the idea. Then we'll be doing on May 25th, the next day, we'll be in L.A., at Black Dog Yoga, which are old friends, Jenny Brill. And I taught this before there, and they really enjoyed it. I have to tell you the story. I'm sorry to keep you from your break, but me and Lama Christy used to go to that studio because it's near her mother's house. But we were keeping silence before noon. So we went there for years in the morning and didn't speak. And we wrote them a note and said, we don't speak before noon, you know. And then we went to Jenny Brill's classes a lot. And we really got to love her, you know. And then she said, those are the weirdos who don't talk. She called us the weirdos who don't talk. And then we did yoga, and she's a really fine teacher. And then she said one day the owner of the studio pulled out these books and said, okay, for the 300-hour yoga training, these are the textbooks. And one was How Yoga Works or something like that. And she turned it over and she said, hey, I know that guy. And the owner said, how do you know him? And she says, know him? I even touched his butt. You know, that's Jenny, if you know Jenny. She likes to correct your posture. And she said, I don't only know him, I touched his bottom a lot. So anyway, we have a really nice relationship with them in Sherman Oaks, so it's over the hill. in the valley, and it's a beautiful, beautiful studio, and a really dedicated group of people, and their yoga level is quite nice. I think Anatole's been there, and we went there. We had good classes there, and so you're welcome to come to that also, okay? L.A. and Sacramento, May 24th and May 25th. And we'll start a long process of teacher training level Yoga Sutra courses, and we'll film them for posterity. Okay, have a break. So just to wrap up on our tangent on the turning of the wheel. Gesundheit. What do you say? Salud? Salud. What do you say in Hebrew? Labrut. Oh, yeah, labrut. Okay. Daniel, what do you say in French? Say? Salud? Oh, same. Okay. All right. So at least I know how to say that. So there were three turnings of the wheel. So now you know a bunch of different meanings of turning of the wheel. It could be turning the wheel in a person's mind. It could be turning the wheel by teaching Dharma. It could be sending out your spaceship. Yes? Did you have a question? I didn't catch that. Say again. Yeah. Is purifications and problems happening when you do purification related to the turning of the wheel?
No, like when you get sick after.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I never heard it said that way, but let me think about it. Let me think about it. And then there were three historical periods of Buddhism in this planet during Lord Buddha's life. And they are called the three turnings of the wheel. So now you're going to be a turning of the wheel expert, okay? The first one is called, the first of the three wheels is called Kaddambo, say Kaddambo, Denshi Chunkor. Kaddambo means the first word, the first word. And Denshi means Denbashi. The four truths. So it was the teaching on the four truths. All things are suffering. There's an end to the suffering. There's a path to the end of suffering. Or something like that. What's the other one? there's a source to it. Sorry, there's suffering. It's coming from someplace. You can stop it. There's a way to stop it. Those are the four. So the very first period in his teaching career in this world. His teaching career was 50 years long. Jesus' teaching career was 2 years long or something. It's kind of extraordinary. So that's why we have more Bibles. Not to say we're more correct than Christianity. We're not. But it's just that we're lucky that our teacher was around for 50 years and taught constantly. So we have a lot more variety. That was the first turning of the wheel, the four truths, which is what he taught to the first five, okay. Ngade Sangbo, say Ngade Sangbo. The pure group of five, Ngade Sangbo. Core Ngade Sangbo, core Ngade Sangbo. Then the second turning of the wheel was Ka Parba, say Ka Parba. Seni Mebe Chunkor. So Parba means like Pardo. Between the middle one, the middle teaching of the wheel, the middle word, which was Cheni Mepi Chunkor, means he taught emptiness. He concentrated on emptiness, okay? During the first turning of the wheel, people asked him, is anything of the pen coming from its own side? And he says, of course, if there was nothing there, how could we see a pen? Then in the middle turning of the wheel, he said, I didn't tell you the whole truth because you weren't ready for it. But there's nothing about the pen that's coming from its own side. Okay? That was the emptiness turning of the wheel, which in Tibet is called Seni Mepa, means no defining characteristics, technically. Then he taught Katama means Lekpa Nambar Chewe Chunkor. Say Lekpa Nambar Chewe Chunkor. The turning of the wheel in which he clarified his position. And he made some fine distinctions. It's called the turning of the wheel of fine distinctions. And then he said, well, you know, there's traces of stuff that could come from its own side. Okay? So in the first turning of the wheel, he said, there's got to be something out there when you see a pen. It can't be all coming from you. And then in the second turning of the wheel, he said, I was just kidding. You weren't ready for the truth. And nothing is coming from its own side. It's all coming from you. Then he got some, what do you call, reaction from people. Some people reacted negatively to that statement. So again, he softened his position just to make them comfortable so they wouldn't quit. But actually, he didn't believe the third turning of the wheel. It's not his position. But he told them, okay, I was just being very radical. And some stuff is coming from its own side, like a little bit. That's like mind-only school or like that, okay? So we believe that only the second turning of the wheel was the truth. And the first and third turnings of the wheel were to make people feel comfortable, okay? When you start your own teaching widely, you know, and you go and give a talk to the members of the Hospital Architectural Society of Miami, which we did last year, 1,200 hospital architects, you don't say nothing's coming from its own side, because you will never go back to the Hospital Architects Convention. You know what I mean? So it just depends on your audience. How much can they take? Okay, so that's a famous teaching called Tange, right? What did he mean and what didn't he mean? Okay. All right, so that's, you just got the full teaching on the turning of the wheel. Okay. Why are we talking about that? Because for the wheel to be turned, you have to ask. And that's step number 6, 5 in the 7 steps before meditation. You should ask people to teach you. I always make this joke. Rinpoche made this joke, you know. If you ask the universe to teach you every morning, it might. Okay? and then they might teach you about patience or things like that, things you weren't expecting to be taught. You know, somebody might attack you, somebody might hurt you. You know, bodhisattvas might show up in your life and test you. Then you can't complain anymore, because every morning you were asking for it. Please teach me. You say, please teach me, before you meditate. And in the afternoon, some guy, you know, steals your money or, you know, says bad things about you. Then you can't complain, because you asked for it in the morning. So if it comes in the afternoon, you have to take it as a lesson. Because obviously not all lessons are positive, right? Some are negative. Many lessons are negative, right? So after you ask the wheel to be turned and they turn it, don't complain. Okay. Chunkor Korwa Kutse, when you are visualizing asking your teacher to teach you, mandala yuna, if you have a mandala plate, right, this for offering a mandala, chombuguku, you should put 9 piles of grain or jewels or rice or whatever you're using, you should put 9 piles. What do you think they represent? I spent a stupid half hour at Echo Cafe searching 500,000 pages of scripture for any mandala involving 9 piles, like 4 continents, Mount Meru 5, there was 4 extra, but there's 8 little continents, can't be that. I was really confused. And then, it's the 8 spokes and the middle of the wheel. It's, okay, it's 9 parts of the wheel. It's the 8 spokes and the what do you call it? The hub of the wheel. Okay, then you should imagine in your hands you have a wheel with 1,000 spokes, okay? That refers to this chakra, and it also refers to a super-duper outer space flying saucer has 1,000 spokes, okay? Tsip Tong Don Denba Pune Suwandep Suwandep and Mupa. Then imagine that you are asking for the wheel to be turned. You are offering the wheel. You are offering a mandala made of the wheel to ask that the wheel be turned. You can even imagine De Yang Rang Ni Tsamba Chambo Mu. You are Brahma 2,500 years ago, asking for the wheel to be turned for the first time. Imagine yourself as a very powerful angel, and you are asking Buddha to turn the wheel. When you think of your teacher and ask them to turn the wheel, you can imagine that they are Lord Buddha and you are Brahma. That was called by this light show to this place to offer the wheel and ask for the teachings. Okay? It's kind of cool, right? Sambachambamu. De le rangda tang me perchute chokchu sangye sam. If you're in the mood, you can clone yourself a zillion times and ask all the Buddhas in the universe to teach at the same time. Deyang ma chokna, if you don't have enough time for that in your morning meditation, tsokshin ki dandan, you can just emanate one Brahma for every lama in the tsokshin, in the visualization of all the lamas, okay? Deyang ma chokna, if you don't even have time to do that, chiki korlo puwe mupacha, then okay, you can just be one Brahma and you can offer to one teacher and that's enough. If you don't have time to visualize more. Those of you who are studying Tibetan should notice the word chok, L-C-O-G-S, okay, which is mentioned here a few times. Chok means to have time for something. Chogmen do means that I don't have time, okay? There's no time. Mi Chokme is the name of a meditational level that you have to reach if you want to see emptiness directly. So there's a meditational level, a specific sliver of the possible range of meditations called Mi Chokme. It's a very unusual and difficult level to reach. You should be meditating every day or you cannot reach it. If you don't reach that platform, you cannot see emptiness directly. Not possible. And then you cannot become enlightened in this lifetime. Not possible. Okay? So if you want to disqualify yourself forever from achieving enlightenment in this life, find reasons not to meditate every day. Because you cannot see emptiness directly if you do not meditate about half an hour to an hour a day. It's not possible. It's like saying, I'm going to do a one-arm handstand, but I don't want to practice every day. It's not going to happen. It cannot happen, okay? That level is called Michogme, which means never no time. Meaning, now you have time to see emptiness. How do you know when you reach Michogme? I'll just give you a feeling, what it would feel like is your concentration is so intense that someone could slam a door in the room. I like to say someone could put a bag of McDonald's french fries under your nose and you wouldn't smell it and you wouldn't hear it. Your concentration is so deep that you can't be shaken out of it. You are out of the realm of the senses. You are no longer, your mind is no longer in the desire realm. Okay, it's a form realm meditation. So your sense powers are shut down. You can't see anything, you can't hear anything, you can't smell anything. Your concentration is totally focused inside. And that's Michokme, okay? Samten, say Samten. Tangbu. Nyendok. Michokme. That's the full name of that level. We don't have time tonight to teach it. But it's interesting that this is one of the only times you'll ever see the word chok, which here means if you don't have time to be a billion Brahmas, you can narrow it down to a couple hundred. If you don't have time for that, just do one. Okay. All right. We finished the fifth preparation. Okay. We're on to the sixth. So he doesn't go too long on that. Okay. He doesn't go too long on that. What lessons do I want you to learn from that? Meaning, what questions do I ask you on your homework? You got to do your homework, okay? Like Esther said. You can't help people if you don't learn this stuff correctly. You are getting it correctly. Whether you pass it on correctly depends on whether you do your homeworks, okay? So it's not for you, okay? Don't think I don't have time or I'm tired. Okay, don't think like that. Think, I have to prepare myself because I have to help other people, okay? It's like you're in medical school. You can skip the part about, you know, giving them oxygen masks when they look like they're dead, or you can skip the part about artificial resuscitation, you know, but somebody might die in your hands if you do, okay? So it's selfish of you not to learn. If you're sitting here, you should do your homework, okay? I don't have time to check everybody and make sure you did your homework. I used to in New York. I used to kick people out. If they missed two homeworks out of 10, I kicked them out of class. I just don't have time to do that, okay? So, you know, you can be a lousy doctor, but you might kill somebody. It's up to you. It's your responsibility to do the homework, okay? For others, all right? Okay. And my experience from 35 years of teaching is that you won't learn it well if you don't do the homework, okay? And do the homework in a group, go to Paradise Cafe, eat four of those cookies stacked with M&Ms. And, I mean, that's not like a, what do you call it, tragedy that you're there eating cookies. You know, it's kind of pleasant, actually, okay? All right. Let me see here. Okay, let's start on the sixth one. Just to start, okay? Drupa nyangen le mendawar sulwan depe yenlarni. Number six is to ask your teacher not to pass into nirvana. Please don't pass into nirvana, okay? That's an old idiom for please don't die. Please don't leave me, okay? Stay in my life. Number six is asking your teachers to stay in your life. It could be your mom who's teaching you. It could be your partner who's teaching you. It could be a formal Dharma teacher. It could be a yoga teacher. But let them know you want them to stay in your life, okay? And in Buddhism, if you don't let them know, it's dangerous, okay? You're supposed to, from time to time, ask your teacher, please stay with me, okay? Please stay in my life. Don't leave me, okay? Like that. Sumen Depangani, dole sangye nyangen nyongmin da she sok tar chir sangye nyangen ne dawa dan chinnupa mekyang. So there's two uses of the word nirvana in Buddhism, right? One means to finish your negative emotions forever. The other one means to die. A teacher dies or pretends to die, okay? So you should know the difference, right? So this section is called asking the teacher not to go into their final nirvana, okay? And that's a euphemism for don't die, okay? Then there's he quotes a single line of a famous verse, okay? And it's Sangye Nyangen Nyongmin Da, which means a Buddha could never go into nirvana anyway. Okay? The line just says a Buddha could never pass into nirvana anyway, etc. He says dot, dot, dot. And he assumes you know the verse, but, you know, most of us don't know the verse. So I went and got it for you. Okay? And then it was so sexy, the chapter before and the chapter after, I went wild and cut out like a lot of poetry on either side of the verse. So I'm sorry. You're going to have like 5 minutes of this poetry just because it's so pretty. It's so beautiful. Here we go. Sero Dambale. Let me find a better version. I got a bunch of versions for you. Okay, here we go. Yeah, this is the Golden Light Sutra, which is also the source of the story of the cubs and the tigress, okay? Then Lord Buddha is speaking, okay? And he says, Sangye yuni samikyap deshin shignam tsungpame Sangye tamje taktu shi Sangye tamje yanda chung. The realms in which Buddhas live are beyond your comprehension. Deshin shignam tsungpame. And they are beings that are unequaled in the entire universe. Sangye tamje taktu shi. They are forever in a state of high peace. Sangye tamje yandajung. They have all occurred to miraculous powers. Sangye tamje kadotsung. All Buddhas are of the same color. Dini sangye chunyin. This is the very nature of a Buddha. Chumden deni chuma min. There is nothing about a Buddha which is artificial. Meaning not emptiness, okay, in this case. Deshin shepa makete, no Buddha has ever been born. Dorje tabur saweku, their bodies are as hard as diamond itself. Tupi kuni tumbadze, and from that diamond body, they send emanations to earth, avatars. Okay, they send avatars to earth. Changsong chenpe ringsel ni. You know what a ringsel is? Yeah, sometimes a Tibetan will get all excited and they'll come up to you with a little thing. It looks like, what's it look like? It looks like a cigar, but it's this long. And it looks like ivory. It looks like polished ivory. And this is called a ringsel. And supposedly, when a Buddha dies or a high Rinpoche dies, if you dig around in their bed, you can find a few of these little things. And that's supposed to be all that they leave. There's no bones, there's no body. There's just these little ring cells. And then Tibetans collect them, you know. I got a ring cell of Jatsu Kapa. I'll give you that for 2 ring cells of Panchen Lamas, you know. And they're like, you know, they're very big deal to Tibetans. And I can see some guy in Taiwan turning out these, anyway, plastic ring cells. Tanso Chenpa Ringselni. The great Siddhi, okay, the great Siddhi, Siddha? What's the person? Siddhi, Siddha. That's a synonym for Lord Buddha. It's called the great Siddha. The great Siddha leaves not even, the great Siddha never leaves a ring cell, even the size of a mustard seed. You won't find a ring cell when this holy being passes. Kula rupa chagmena, ring cell yipa kalagyar. How could you have a ring cell if the body has no blood or bone in the first place? If the body is made of light, when they choose to withdraw their emanation from this planet, it's kind of foolish to go looking for a ring cell in their bed, okay? Because they were only light in the first place, okay? Semjen nana pembecher, to help the people of this planet, tapki rinso shakpat say, they might leave a ring cell if they think it might help somebody. Dzogpe sangye chukiku, but the ultimate Buddha is the Dharmakaya, the emptiness of the Buddha and the wisdom. Deshin shepa chukiying, the Buddha is emptiness. Chetun zepa chindapa chamdadeke kudenda. Then they show bodies because they have to teach. People need to hear. To turn the wheel of the Dharma in the mind, somebody has to turn the wheel in speech. Daki di to sheneni, daki tamba sowa che. Deni kona lungten chir, tamleng wani daki che. The only reason I speak is so that people can learn. And in the same way that I learned, and I learned by asking other holy beings to teach me. Okay? Like that. Then that's all he says. De ne lai bu sumti niton ki deshin shepe kutse tse temba samo de tabu di tene tamje kyan lana mepe yanda pe zabi chanje di sem kete. There were 32,000 angels listening. unenlightened, not yet enlightened angels. And they got all excited by these words. And suddenly they all got bodhicitta. Okay? They all suddenly felt bodhicitta. Zabhichandan. They da yiki kunditopa rabgane drake tumba chisuchapadida meso. Then out of joy, they all sang the following lines. Okay? Sange nyangen yominda. So what we learn, that's the line that Pabon Kumbhache quoted. That's the little piece that he quoted. The Buddha never passes into nirvana, right? That's all that he quoted from this whole sutra, was that one line. It wasn't spoken by Lord Buddha. Okay? You learn something. Okay? It was spoken by the 32,000 angels. Okay? And they're all singing as one. The verse comes into their mind together. 32,000 people get the same verse flashing through their mind and they sing it in harmony. Okay? Sangye nyangan nyomenda. The Buddha never passes anyway. Chukyan nupa mingyarte. And the Dharma never disappears in a world. Semchen yongsu minze chu. But to help people's development, their spiritual development, yongsu nyangan dawa tun. A Buddha will pretend to die. A Buddha will pretend to pass away. Okay. Sangye chomden samikyap. The Buddhas are beyond our comprehension. Deshin shepa takpe ku. Their bodies are immortal and infinite. Semchen namla penje chir. But to help people to, what do you call it? To kick people in the butt. Get them motivated. Kupanamba naso tun. They pretend to take on different forms, like I got you taking, like pretending to be sick, or pretending to age, or pretending to die. Okay, so that's the whole quotation. Okay, I just thought you should hear the whole thing. Chir sangye nyangen le dawa don chunupa mekyang. Generally speaking, a Buddha cannot die. And the Dharma can also not disappear from a world. It's not possible. Okay? It cannot happen. But Choki Chuki Nyangane Dawar Tumbala Nyangen and Min Dawar Suwandam Gu. But from our side, it's a necessary exercise to ask our teacher not to pass away. Because they could pretend to. Okay? So while you ask them not to pass away, you keep in mind that they don't have to. But you should ask, because they might pretend to. So it's important to ask, okay? De ma tab na kyun chete. If you don't ask them to stay, you can make a big mistake. Sangye nyangen le dakar. When the Buddha... Later in the Buddha's life, Deshin Shekpa Ni Minjikpa Shi Dang Zuchu Ki Kangpa Shi La Teng Ko Mang Du Ze. He started saying weird things to his disciples, particularly to the disciple Kungawo. What's that in Sanskrit? Ananda. Ananda. Okay. A means very much. Nanda means joy. Okay. Ananda. Then he started saying weird things to, especially to Ananda, right? And he said, a Buddha who has reached the four kinds of fearlessness, which I will teach you about tomorrow, okay? And who has reached the four kinds of miraculous powers, right? And who's good at them, Mang Du Tse, Dorje Tabi Ku Nyepa, their body is like a diamond. Sangye Kishupa Shena, if they wish to, kapaam kapale hakpang shuk, they could stay in this world for millions of years or more. Okay? If they wanted to, because they have those powers, they could maintain a body in this world for millions of years or more. La Sungkyang, he kept hinting to Ananda. He kept giving Ananda hints. You know, saying, I could stay. It's possible. You know? This is one of the saddest moments in the history of Buddhism in 2,500 years. It is called the Great Mistake. Okay? In millions of pages of Buddhism, this sentence is called the Great Mistake. Okay? And Ananda lived forever with it after that. All Buddhist history for 25 centuries, people have looked back and said, he made a mistake. He made the great mistake. What was the mistake? Kungao Duki Chingilam. Ananda's mind was poisoned by a demon in that moment, in those days, right? Lape Tunma Kone, he didn't understand what the Buddha was trying to say. Suwa Matapa, he didn't ask him to stay. So he didn't ask him to stay. And then Tumba Gunlo Gechupar Nyangane Depa. And then he passed. Lord Buddha passed at the age of 80. He passed from this world. Okay. Yimbe. Therefore, don't wait. Pabonka says, don't wait. Okay. Until it's too late. Okay. Don't wait until it's too late. You have to ask them to stay. Okay. You have to. We have to ask our teachers to stay. Because when it's too late, there's nothing. There's nothing, okay? You don't have anything. You know, I saw Life of Pi. It's like being in the Pacific Ocean with nothing, you know? It's to not have a teacher is the end of your life. You might as well be dead. It's better to die, okay, than to not have a teacher, okay? Like that. So he says, don't wait too long. Okay. All right. On that cheerful note, I'm sorry to do that heavy, but it's very beautiful and it's very important. Okay. All right.
Shibu ki joshi me donta Lila bling shi ninde gembadi Sangye shindu vite uagi Doka namda shina chepasho Idam gada radna mandala kamna yataya mi Dihi kehemo kusa
Buenas noches.